Welcome to Aetherius Radio Live, the Hour of Truth, with Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blades.
A very warm welcome to listeners of Aetherius Radio Live and those of you who are new. This is brought to you on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio every third Tuesday of the month. Discover the cosmic message for this age revealed through legendary master of yoga and world-renowned medium, Dr. George King, between 1954 and 1997. Today, your host, Chrissy Blaze, is joined by her guest, Gino Schaldoni from Canada, who is an international speaker and instructor of metaphysical topics and is also a full staff member of the Aetherius Society. They will be discussing sacred mountains of power. So welcome, Gino. And without further ado, I hand you over to Chrissy and Gino.
Hello, Nikki. Thank you so much.
Hello.
Hi, Gino. So nice to have you on Chrissy. The show.
Yes, thank you. It's a great honor for me. And hello, Nikki. Thank you.
So I'm very glad to have Gino. He's our first Canadian, I believe, on Aetherius Radio Live. And we will be discussing a very exciting topic, the sacred mountains of power. Humanity has a fascination with mountains and sites which are sacred places on our beautiful Mother Earth. Over the centuries and today, we are drawn to experience these magical, mystical places. And I'll just go through a few of them that you would be very aware of. The Himalayas in Tibet, of course, known for thousands of years as the seat of wisdom, where there were several retreats of the spiritual hierarchy of Earth. Although in these times of great change, the great masters and ascended masters have been instructed to move from these remote mountains closer to civilization, which we will talk about today. The spiritual hierarchy has retreats in strategic parts of the world, and these are mountains. Our master, Dr. George King, because of his own spiritual status, has access to these retreats. He has explained that under these mountains are huge buildings inhabited by ascended masters who can travel freely between these retreats, either physically or in dematerialized form. They are in a way working undercover, holding in abeyance the karma of the human race, protecting us, radiating great spiritual power, teaching, inspiring, and generally sacrificing themselves to help us and the earth wherever and however they can. Mount Shasta, Northern California. This is another important sacred mountain. And beneath this mountain is a very active and important retreat. This mountain has long been revered by the Native Americans, who regard it as the center of creation. Grand Teton in Wyoming. It's another of the retreats of these great masters and ascended masters working silently on our behalf. And there are other retreats in India, the Andes, in Ceylon, and in Egypt. But apart from these retreats of the spiritual hierarchy, there are other important mountains with great spiritual significance to which people often make pilgrimage and revere. And these include Mount Sinai in Egypt, which is an important mountain. It's considered holy by not only Christians, but by Jews and Muslims alike. It's a site where Moses received the Ten Commandments. There's Mount Fuji in Japan, which has been the center of Japanese spiritual practice for thousands of years and is regarded as a site of great reverence. And there are many more which we can think of. But we are today at a major crossroads on this earth, which is becoming more and more apparent. However, what most people don't realize is that the biggest problem facing us is not even things like war or poverty or starvation, however serious these are. It is a lack of applied spirituality. And one main aspect of this is our right relationship with the earth. We are out of touch and out of tune. So how do we change this? Well, today in this show, Gino and I are going to discuss not so much these beautiful ancient sacred mountains from the past, but how in this modern era, many more accessible mountains are now available for the average person to climb and radiate great spiritual power to this world. And this is thanks to the amazing 3-year mission called Operation Starlight, which took place between 1958 and 1961, when 19 mountains were made holy as New Age power centers for this Aquarian age. You will hear how these sacred mountains are all part of a grand design. Nothing is by chance. A part of a cosmic plan put into being by ancient intelligences. Operation Starlight was a brilliant move by the cosmic masters, made through their advanced spirituality and technology, charging mountains around the world with spiritual power through their human agent, the great spiritual master, Dr. George King. These are practical days, and the need today in this age of Aquarius is for everyone to play their part in bringing about a new age of peace and enlightenment. Operation Starlight is another way in which we all can do this. It was reported that 2,000 years ago, the Master Jesus, by his presence in three places, caused these places to be charged. But it was done in such a subtle way that the energy could only be accessed by a skilled initiate. It was not by chance, but by the design of the Ancient Ones, that Jesus came again in these days and initiated Operation Starlight. Our Master said about this, he initiated it, and it came to us in a subtle manner, rather like the dawn of a new day. We didn't realize that the dawn had broken until later we saw the light from the sun. It was later, after the first physical meeting on Holdstone Down in North Devonshire in England, between our Master and the Avatar of Love, Jesus, reported in fascinating detail in his book, Jesus Comes Again, that our Master realized that a new operation, again in his words, something entirely different, something never before attempted in recorded history, had been initiated, and that he, Dr. King, had been instructed to perform this 3-year operation. Isn't it logical that it would be the Master Jesus, this great Master of Love, the Master of the Age of Pisces, who would hand over this baton of power for the Aquarian Age by starting this mission? It was only days after this that Jesus delivered the 12 blessings, the prayers that are used in Aetherius Society pilgrimages. I'd like now to hand over to Gino. I wonder if you'd like to give to the listeners an overview of Operation Starlight from this first magical phase on Holdstone Down, Devon.
Yes, Chrissy, thank you. Operation Starlight really started off, as you mentioned, on Holdstone Down with the meeting, a rendezvous with the Master Jesus. And I don't know if our Master really revealed to the public what was expedition that he had to go on for the next 3 years. I don't know that he knew, but he was certainly commissioned to go around. We had, 9 mountains in the UK, and he didn't know that he had to go over to America and extend it. You know, these things were revealed to the public in steps. What is important for people to know that these mountains are charged for our benefit. Anybody can go up. We don't have to be members of the Aetherius Society. I just want to make that clear. You can go up with any pure heart and say a prayer for anyone, really, or just the world in general, in your own way. And the powers that would be available to you, which I'll get into a little later on in this interview, is that they'll just be incredible. You'll feel this surge. I've had experiences where people have come up and they didn't believe in anything, and they just irrefutable to them that the energies were just coursing through them. It's very inspiring, very strenuous time for our Master. He had many injuries. You know, it was always a challenge finding personnel to help him on these expeditions, I'll call them that, later on. These injuries came around to haunt him and stay with him for his whole life. Possibly a karmic move that had to, unfortunately, be manipulated on our behalf. And he certainly did take on his share of karma.
Thank you, Gino. Yes, it's interesting. This was indeed a fantastic mission, as our master expressed. And I read the reading, his words about that. But it was also, I was reading something recently from White Eagle Lodge. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it was a spiritual organization founded in 1936 by a very well-known medium at the time called Grace Cook. But she was a channel for White Eagle, who was an advanced individual, it seems. And one of the things he prophesied was that a man would come to Earth and he would travel to certain mountains and that he would radiate great light and these mountains would become forever holy, which was very interesting. Now, of course, it didn't say who the person was, but the same communicator, White Eagle, also stated in the 1930s that spacecraft would be seen in the skies of Earth more and more as the years went on. So it's interesting that it makes you realize that Operation Starlight isn't something that just came into being, but it was something that was planned probably, maybe thousands of years before. Who knows? But by the ancient ones. It was part of the great cosmic plan for peace and enlightenment. As you say, Gino, the mountains are very accessible, especially in the British Isles, where there are, and I just want to say a few words about this, and please feel free to join in, but there are 9 holy mountains there, and many pilgrims have climbed them all. I had a chance to climb 8 of the 9 before moving to the USA in 1994, because in Britain, we have these regular pilgrimages to all the mountains. So if you are a new listener, then please do contact the society and find out when these pilgrimages are, because they really are fantastic. And Gino can tell you more about the one near us in Michigan, Mount Adams, later on. And people ask, though, I just want to say one thing, why there are so many in Britain? Well, we don't really know, except one can guess it was partly because we're told that Britain is extremely significant. And not because of the people in it, of course, but our master said in his lecture, The Occult Significance of Britain, that there's a definite line, an occult, a radionic line of power, which runs from the Pyramid of Giza through Stonehenge and through Avebury. And it's for a very good reason that just between Avebury, or what was the Temple of Avebury, and Stonehenge, that here is the most significant entrance right down to the Logos of Earth, making this small island very, very significant. And perhaps this is one reason why the 9 holy mountains were charged in Britain. Another reason may have been purely for practical reasons, because Britain's small and our master had to travel and climb all these 18 of the 19 mountains in a certain time frame. So Gino, one point I wanted to ask you, because listeners don't know, but Gino was an Iron Man, triathlete and martial artist. And I'm sure this has helped you in climbing the mountains. And I know you sort of more or less run up and down Mount Adams, which is quite a hard mountain to climb. But do you think that a certain athleticism is needed by people who perhaps haven't climbed a holy mountain before, maybe inspired to make these pilgrimages? They're not Iron Men or women. What could you say about that?
You wouldn't know I did all these if you looked at my belly at the moment. So I am a little out of shape, and last pilgrimage last year, 2023, it was a little more of a struggle than I'm normally used to. I'll just throw that out there. But absolutely not a requirement, Chrissy. I mean, we wouldn't have anybody climbing if we were all athletic. We've had people in their well into their 80s come up. You know, but I will throw out a proviso that some conditioning leading up to these climbs, especially Mount Adams, Mount Baldy, and various other ones, of course, though those happen to be the two that I've been to that were the most strenuous. And there's some physical exertion. You might want to eat clean leading up to at least 2-3 months ahead, and just an effort in that regard. But you certainly do not have to run up them. I would just put that out there. They were made to be available for everyone of pure heart. And obviously, if there's some injuries of knees, ankles, hips, that sort of thing, you know, you'll want a doctor's opinion. Absolutely. We would encourage you to do that and just to see if this is the right mountain to climb, and get in touch with your local headquarters branches and speak to the organizers of the pilgrimages to find out how heavy the pack would be, for example. For example, on Mount Adams, we camp up there for 3 days. So you're carrying quite a heavy pack, whereas Mount Baldy is more of a day trip. Not to say it's, you know, easy, but you certainly do not have to pack for 3 days.
So. Yeah, the beauty of Mount Baldy is, of course, that there are three levels that people can climb to. So if you can go up a ski lift at Mount Baldy, you can just walk for about 5-10 minutes to a kind of a low down area where we have pilgrimages, actually make two main areas. And if you are fitter, then you can climb up to the charged spot on Mount Baldy. So it's easy for most people. And Hoddesdon Down, of course, in North Devonshire, from London, they arrange annual pilgrimages, and people have regular pilgrimages there. I think it's accessible by virtually everybody. And even though last year I did have a hip problem when I went up, I still could do it and stand for several hours. And, you know, and also people who can't stand, there are seats available during official pilgrimages. So it's very, very accessible for everybody, I think, to climb one. I mean, Hoddesdon Down is about a 20-minute walk up a reasonably steep hill, but not a mountain. It's called a holy mountain, but really it's like a steep hill. Would you agree, Gino?
Yes. my experience last year for the first time at the 50th anniversary, it was a pleasant climb. I would say most people would be able to do that quite easily without any training in sort of mountains, and certainly some of the mountains around the world that are more difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Some of them, especially Mount Kilimanjaro, but that has been climbed by members of the Etheria Society over the years. But that certainly takes a lot of training and so forth. And it's not recommended unless you really train for it. Would you agree, Gino?
Absolutely. I have not done it. It is on my bucket list, as are all of the mountains at some point. And just by the stories of some of the people I've spoken to, it is, you do need a bit of a team, and, you know, the local help will get you partway up. You know, it comes down to atmosphere, oxygen that thins out up there. And that's another sort of training. I would say your morning or afternoon, evening deep breathing sessions will go a long way in contributing to a more pleasant experience. And that goes with all the mountains.
Yes, it's so true. And Gino, you said that, you know, anyone of a pure heart, well, anyone who, whether they have a pure heart or not, but if they want to pray for world peace, for help relieve the suffering of others, anyone can go up these mountains, these holy mountains, which are listed on the Etheria Society website, I believe, and also etherius.org. Also the book called The Holy Mountains of the World, I highly recommend. But you can perform any selfless prayers and radiate tremendous amounts of energy. So Gino, can you explain in more detail what a person would do when they get up to these holy mountains?
Yes, Chrissy. So let's assume we're near the charge spot. You certainly do not have to, we should mention, some of the taller mountains. Some people have, you had said with Mount Baldy, there's actually three different levels of plateaus that you can sort of get up to if you cannot get to the charge spot, which usually typically is around the peak and the summit of the mountain. The charge is all the way down, you know, as close to the bottom as you can make it. As close as the top as you can make it, but certainly it's not absolutely essential to be at the peak. When you get up there, let's say with the Etheria Society, we usually have our visualizations, the violet flame, the white light, the practice of the presence, just to begin getting the energy flowing, just the same way we would do at any 12 blessing circle, for example. If it is an organized pilgrimage by the society, we do the prayers within the 12 blessings. Chrissy has mentioned what the 12 blessings are in the past, definitely. Those are, we've been told, the most potent prayers to be performed on the mountains. However, any prayer from the heart. You could be Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, or a non-believer, for example, and you're just reaching out, agnostic. You know, even if you're not visualizing a white light, you could just say this prayer out to the world. Pray to a higher source of any higher source for inspiration, help, for this energy to flow through you. And it will come up out of the mountain, up through you and out to the world. And as I mentioned earlier, people feel this. I've had people not, you know, non-Aetherius members. I managed to convince them that they have to come on a pilgrimage. And at the end of it, they absolutely were thrilled. And they had visions of divas and just all sorts of wonderful things. And I'm sitting there, geez, I didn't get anything like that. You know, I've been coming up here for years. Yeah, absolutely. It's not a requirement. I just want to make sure it's only required that you want to help. And it could be an ailing family member, friend, work colleague, and so forth.
The beauty of the mountains also, Gino, isn't it? That everyone is completely unique because it has a unique energy, because they're charged by different cosmic masters. And so, you know, you can't just climb, well, you can just climb one, but if the more you can climb, the better, because you'll find that each mountain has a totally different experience. And I'd just like to say a little bit about Brown Willy, which is, if you're going to Holston Down and you have a few days, you can climb Brown Willy and Yes Tor, because they're all very near each other. You can climb the three in a day. But I had a bit of an experience. It's an easy mountain to climb. And it's one you definitely should have on your bucket list, please, listeners, because it's only 1,377 feet. So you'd say, well, that's easy, right? And it's an extremely important mountain, but it's not necessarily easy, because when Gary and I went there, we found that the fogs immediately came down and we couldn't even see each other. The fog was so thick that we just had to leave that mountain for the time. But hopefully you won't have that experience. But I mean, it's such a fantastic mountain and such an important one, because what is called the Lord's Declaration was delivered there on November the 23rd, 1958, in phase two of Operation Starlight. And for those listeners in England, I think often and usually a pilgrimage is done on that date for this particular event. And at the time on that date, Dr. King was visited by a great intelligence. He said, like the voice of God, a great Lord of Karma delivered a declaration, the Lord's Declaration, and recorded for posterity. But it was given for the future of humanity, and it tells of the coming of another great master to this earth. But this time, this extraterrestrial avatar will come with full powers, unlike previous avatars, great avatars like Jesus and Buddha, who were grossly limited by having to inhabit physical bodies, giving them only a fraction of their true powers. And yet, even so, look at how amazing they were. There are some of us who look forward to this day, but it will be like a spiritual sword of Damocles, if you like. It won't be easy, even for those of us who are consciously on a spiritual path, because we will have to change. Unless we can honestly say that our every thought, our every action is towards God, is enlightened. And if we can say that, then it will be easier for us. But I don't believe it will be an easy time. But it's a very exciting thing to look forward to. It will be happening. And over the years, we have asked Dr. King if he knew when this coming would be. And he would often reply mysteriously that it was up to us. And so this mountain is extremely important. It's kind of like, I always think of it like Moses and the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. Another commandment was given for this age, if you like. So also this area, this whole area and this mountain, Jesus visited this area as a boy. And this is another entire topic, which we can't go into now, but is very, very fascinating. There is a lot of evidence that, I say evidence, a lot of stories passed down through the ages that this was the case, and a lot of background evidence that this would have happened. And also this whole area is steeped in the legend of King Arthur, who is supposed to be in that district. So it's a fascinating mountain. I've been there several times, and I believe that it's a very sacred place. That must be on your bucket list too, Gino, do you think?
Absolutely it is. I can't wait. I was a little sorry not to be able to do that last year and in the previous years where I had a little more opportunity possibly to get out, but it will happen.
It will indeed. And one last thing before the break, I just wanted to talk about some interesting experiences that I think many, many people have on these holy mountains. And we'd love to hear from listeners about their experiences, by the way, including some psychic apparitions, astounding devic activity. But I'd just like to mention something that happened to Gary and I when we were climbing Yes Tor, and we got lost in the rain and the mist, which is quite frequent there. But we didn't give up, but we couldn't see which way to go. The mist was very, very thick. And then suddenly we were walking for, I don't know, about half an hour or so, not really knowing which way to go. We couldn't really see much. And believe it or not, suddenly out of the mist came two figures, a man and a woman. They pointed to us to follow them. They didn't say a word, which we did for quite a way. It must have been an hour or so. Then they pointed to the right and disappeared into the mist. And this had led us to the summit of Yes Tor. Not a word was spoken. And it's hard to know who they were. They may just have been hikers. But both Gary and I did feel that we were sort of helped in some mysterious way. Gino, I think you've had some interesting experiences, but we're just about to go into a break. So hold that thought, Gino. And we'll go over to Nikki, our producer, who will give our announcements, and we'll get back to Gino's experiences. I think that was on Mount Adams, right, Gino?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, we look forward to that after the break.
We'll hold tight.
Thank you. Wow. Hold tight.
Wow, Chrissy. Gosh, you got us on tenterhooks there and with Gino. Gosh, thank you so very much. It's fascinating information you're both giving, as well as some practical advice. Thank you both. You are listening to Aetherius Radio Live with Chrissy Blaise and her guest Gino Schaldoni discussing sacred mountains of power. And this leads us nicely into announcing the few pilgrimages to certain holy mountains in the UK and the USA that will be taking place this coming weekend, and also a couple in September. So to start, Saturday, August 24th, Yes Tor in Devon, and excuse my pronunciation here, Craiganlechoine in Scotland. Then Sunday, August 25th, we've got Ben McDewy in Scotland. Now, Ben McDewy is not one of the mountains charged in Operation Starlight, but it is a retreat of the spiritual hierarchy of Earth that is closely connected with Craiganlechoine. So do try and climb that one as well. Then later in September, which is Saturday, September the 21st, we've got Mount Baldy in Southern California and Mount Taloc at Lake Tahoe in Northern California. So that's a great diary of activities to look forward to. For more information about the 19 mountains that were charged during Operation Starlight, as already mentioned by Chrissy and Gino, please visit our website, aetherius.org. Now, there's a couple more announcements. Activities at the Eastern USA branch. Now, you can't miss this one. Thursday, September 19th, a class in the Earth Goddess series entitled A New Ecology, Working with the Devic Forces and the Earth to Maintain Balance. And this will be led by no other than Chrissy Blaise. So don't miss that one. And it begins at 7:30 p.m. Now, activities at the temple in London on September the 21st, Saturday, a very special event is being held. And this is entitled Psychic Powers and Meditation, an interactive afternoon with Richard Lawrence, which starts at 6 p.m. BST. So if you are able to attend, this will certainly be a truly amazing experience. Ooh, and one more, once again, fortunately for the world, 12 midnight GMT on Tuesday, September the 3rd, we will be blessed by the presence of the Shining Temple of Light, satellite number 3, when it comes into orbit of Earth, to imbue us with its vital spiritual energy, potentizing all selfless actions by a factor of 3,000 times, and will remain in orbit until October the 9th. We will be welcoming these gods from space with our heartfelt prayers in a special service to mark the first hour of the third spiritual push for 2024. And this will be live streamed from the Aetherius Temple in London, details of which are on aetherius.org. You are warmly invited to join in with our services held leading up to and including this important period to flood our world with much spiritual light and energy. As always, details of these and other upcoming events, please visit aetherius.org. And one more, you're very welcome to join us on September the 17th for another exciting Aetherius Radio Live show, when more intriguing subjects will be discussed during this hour of truth. Next month's title being, now wait for it, Chakras, the second most valuable thing in all of existence. Now that's a teaser if ever there was. So that's it for now, and I'm very pleased to hand you back to Chrissy and Gino.
Thank you, Nikki. We keep busy in the Aetherius Society, don't we?
Certainly do. I just want to climb all of them, Chrissy.
Yeah, absolutely. Mount Taloc's a beautiful mountain. And if we have time, I'd love to talk about something that happened on Mount Taloc. But over to you, Gino, to talk about your experience on Mount Adams.
Well, I want to say it was 2015, that year of the pilgrimage. I, along with two other members, prominent members of the society, had a UFO sighting along with me. And it's one of the best ones I've ever seen. I've had, I would say, three very legitimate ones. This one is that takes the cake. It was a very big, I would say, giant orange disc. It wasn't flying very, very quickly. It was just coasting across the sky. And as it went along, it started slowly changing from a bright orange into a fiery red to, it wasn't on fire, but just that, I'm trying to give you a color context here. And then it eventually blinked out, and absolutely not, couldn't have been a satellite dish. It couldn't have been anything like that. It was too large. I turned to the person that I was with. I didn't verify if they wanted their names mentioned or not. And she absolutely saw it. Another person in another vehicle, because we were at the base. It was at night, so we had just came back. Our climb was going to be the next morning, so traditionally we all go out for dinner and that sort of thing. So we finished our dinner. We're going back to our motels, ready to climb for the morning. And this happened, the sighting, and it was very encouraging for the rest of the 3 days. And couldn't have been a reflection in the mirror, the glass, that sort of thing, because we had someone in another vehicle seeing this. And so it was a very good one. It was very encouraging. I would say also, I had mentioned earlier that we had a non-member join us last year, a very pure-hearted person, very open-minded. I want to say that she saw a mountain diva. For our new listeners, there are divas throughout nature, and we've got lots of programs on that. I don't want to get into it, but there are divas of the mountains. We were doing a 12-blessing service. She stopped, and I just heard these, oh my gosh, wow. And just, you know, I'm thinking, what is she seeing? But we carried on with the prayers, and it wasn't until afterwards when we got back to the hut, because she stayed quite quiet about it, kept it to herself, and then she explained what she saw, and it was a beautiful, giant purple being. And Chrissy, don't we just wish we could have these experiences ourselves? Here's someone brand new to the society, and just a lovely person. She absolutely deserved to see something like that. So those are two prominent experiences that were fairly recent, and very encouraging for people. We don't know. We don't go there for these reasons. If they happen, great. And we make a mental note and share with the world.
Yeah, that is very encouraging. Wow, wonderful UFO sighting there. So could you estimate approximately the size or the height? Probably not, but no.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. I would say a few miles up into the air. I never thought of it, but if you were looking at a plate, you know, dinner plate, round dinner plate on your table, and put that up, maybe just hold it up, that would be about the size of it. How far up into the atmosphere, I have no idea. But our satellite dishes are not that big. If they were to light on fire by reentry into the atmosphere and that sort of thing, this was not that. It was a very clean circle, very pure colors, and Yeah, it's burnt into my memory
forever. Wow, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It sounds fantastic, Gino. Thank you. Now, one thing we have to focus on, of course, which is a very important part of Operation Starlight. Without our master, without Dr. George King, there wouldn't be an Operation Starlight in the way it is. It was the work of one man, a great master, and occasionally a small team with him, which took over 3 years of dangerous and strenuous activity. And at the time, Dr. King was fit and strong and younger, but not a mountaineer. And he didn't have the equipment that we have today. But of course, his skills were extraordinary and his will and his courage beyond compare. And it may seem to listeners as a lovely mission, and certainly it was, looking back, because Operation Starlight adorned the earth with these beautiful jewels, which glow ever brighter with every pilgrimage made to these holy places. But one should never forget, though, the tremendous suffering of one man who took on this 3-year task, and he sacrificed so much to give these New Age power centers to humanity, not just now, but for all times. And let me just give you a couple of examples of what Dr. King had to endure. And perhaps Gino may know of others too. But when our master was sent to charge Mount Adams, we just talked about Mount Adams, on March the 15th, which is the birthday of the true birth date of the Master Jesus, actually, 1960, which is the closest mountain to us in Michigan. It's about a week's travel to get there, I believe. But he just returned from a pilgrimage to Ben Hope in the north of Scotland, where he had severely injured his hip. And he amazingly struggled on Ben Hope for another 6 agonizing hours. And how many people would go from that to climbing Mount Adams, which is a very difficult mountain to climb as well in the USA. So that was one of the things. And another really brutal climb was Mount Wakefield in New Zealand. He climbed this just with one other person, Keith Robertson, an early staff member of the Aetherius Society, a dynamic young man who I knew quite well. And he told me afterwards, Keith told me, that they were actually trapped on the mountain in the freezing cold. It was actually Christmas. And they didn't know if they'd survive. They had to, it was so freezing up there, they had to sort of hug each other to just, you know, keep warm at night. And they didn't really know if they would make it. You may wonder, well, why was Dr. King climbing in the middle of winter? Well, of course, all of this is a karmic manipulation. Everything he did, he was the master of karmic manipulation, if you like. Everything he did was to try and improve the karma of humanity. And by doing things in the most difficult possible way, then he was manipulating the karma for us all, if you like. And he went up many mountains, charged under the most difficult conditions in the dead of winter. In those days, by an extremely ill-equipped team. And apparently when they went up into Scotland, again in the dead of winter, they talked to a man who had been the Royal Air Force advisor to a Himalayan expedition to Tibet. So they hoped that this man would come up with some advice to them. And they also asked him whether he'd come with them. But after seeing their equipment, he tried to talk them out of it. And he said, apparently, you'll never make it. And even if you do make it, there are things in those mountains which have caused people to die of fright before now. So this was the kind of help that Dr. King got, you know, the kind of encouragement he got when having to climb these mountains. It wasn't easy. It certainly wasn't easy. So, Gino, back to you. Can you explain to the listeners how exactly the mountains were charged? What enabled the mountains to hold this charge of energy that were given by the cosmic masters?
Yes, absolutely. We've heard that location, you had mentioned that earlier, is very important, being accessible to human population, to, you know, there's no good having one out, you know, in the North Pole and never be visited. You know, some of them are a little more remote, but they are accessible. I think the other important note is the mineral and crystal content of these places, because as we know, the mineral kingdom can hold a charge, and anybody in the metaphysics will learn that quickly, or go to your current metaphysical rock store and you'll just see the different aspects to some of the different gems and crystals that are there. And they all, you know, one's for healing, one's for inspiration and so forth. These mountains definitely do carry the ability to retain a charge of that nature, which is beyond us at the moment. And I almost want to say the energy put into these mountains through Dr. King had some sort of code to them. The more we use them, the more they become awake and activated. And sometimes a metaphysician might say, well, I've drained the energy out of everything I can possibly take from this particular object. You know, it's done. That is not the case with these mountains. The more we use them, the more active they become. And it's more encouraging for pilgrims to join in when we possibly can. So I would say that the crystalline structure, the mineral content of the mountain is a very big component of it. The mountains are multi-purpose useful. They're not just for pilgrimages anymore. They've become, you know, retreats and that sort of thing. So we'll get into that in a moment, as we mentioned. It's also key. A key point here is that any ordinary person, and I certainly put myself in that classification. I don't know about you, Chrissy. If we were to climb, certainly not adepts. We're not propounding that, but we climb any holy mountain, perform these wonderful rituals. Obviously, the 12 blessings would be the most potent ones to perform on the holy mountains. We would be invoking energy as if we were an adept, you know, a Moses of the past. Believe it or not, these energies will be available to us. And that is another program, I say code or programming effect of these mountains. We're in the information age. I'm into computers and things, but that's the only sort of analogy I can put to this quality. You know, it's very important for people to understand. It's not our puny little prayer sometimes as we feel inferior. It's the amplification effect when we're on the mountain that comes out, and it's just you are controlling incredible, incredible forces. It's very encouraging.
Yeah, that the amplification, that's a very important point, Gino. Thank you so much for explaining that. Another aspect of this amplification was that the Master of Therius, after Operation Starlight, revealed one secret, that the mountains had been interlinked, that there had been an underground connection made, and the cosmic intelligences linked the mountains together. And a master said about that, he said, what a great task it must have been to link up each of these mountains with a system through which power could flow and gradually balance the power throughout the surface of the world where the mountains are. Wow. It's an incredible thing now that when we pray on Mount Baldy or Holston Down or Mount Halak or any of the mountains, we draw power from not only that mountain, but you affect the power in all the mountains, releasing great spiritual energy into the world. What an incredible gift this is. So I always think, if people don't really believe in the great masters or have a problem believing in the interplanetary masters, I would say go to these holy mountains. And I think it's a sort of a living proof of their work and their tremendous interest and compassion and love for humanity. So Gino, you mentioned that the mountains are used also in other ways. And so I wondered if you could explain what you mean by that.
Yes, absolutely. Let me back up a bit. So some of the mountains have a peculiar aspect to them. So for example, Mount Adams has a more of a healing type energy. So if you go up there, you will not only get healing for yourself, although that's not your motive. You might be sending healing out to the world. Whereas a Mount Baldy might be more of a higher inspirational energy of a quality of that nature. But since they've all been linked, you are actually accessing all mountains except for three of them. I'll get into that in a second, that are sort of removed from these. So 19 minus three. So 16 of the mountains, you would have the aspects of that. So there would be maybe higher higher intuition, devotion, healing, all of these different traits. And it was quite the undertaking, Chrissy, for the masters to link all of these. Once Operation Starlight was completed in this great subterranean link effect of these mountains, 3 of the 19 holy mountains were actually not included in the subterranean link. They have a special link among the 3 of them that is not sort of commingled, as it were, with the other mountains and the other traits of those mountains. There's no particular reason that was given to us other than at some point in the future that perhaps they will be mixed in. All we know is that they are not mixed in. They have a special quality to these. Those mountains would be Ben Hope in Scotland, Castle Peak in Colorado, USA, and Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, Africa. And again, I mentioned that for reasons only known to the masters, that these energies are not commingled and they are special, probably for special missions as well. Chrissy, you had mentioned, you know, 9 of these mountains were charged in the British Isles. People have mentioned why so many in such a concentrated area. Well, it's probably a number of things. And I think hints from lectures that our master has given, alluding to that, you know, getting these mountains charged so that the energy could be accessible very quickly, get energy out flowing to the world, perhaps used in other missions at the time by the cosmic masters. But it also did allow for retreats of the Great White Brotherhood to open up to the West, the Western world. For the longest time, the wisdom of seat of wisdom, as they say, but the higher masters have been in the East mainly, and these mountains being charged in the UK opened this up. Ben McDewey, for example, in Scotland had become a retreat of the Great White Brotherhood shortly afterwards. So did Castle Peak in Colorado. And it's not the only one in America. Days of Old with Mount Shasta, that is also a spiritual hierarchy of earth retreat. The 3rd one would be Mount Kilimanjaro. So we have 2 of these mountains that were charged. Ben McDewey is not one, but 2 of them, Castle Peak, Mount Kilimanjaro, as holy mountains that were charged in Operation Starlight and that are very prominent retreats for the Great White Brotherhood. And really, this is promising for the future of, I would say, openness of the spiritual hierarchy to come out among us, as has been promised, has been prophesied, when humanity is ready. Having retreats scattered throughout the continents is just absolutely a necessary achievement here. So it's great news for future openness among us. The Holy Mountains are used in a mission called Operation Sunbeam, for example. And this is what's fascinating. For those of you who do not know what Operation Sunbeam is it's a token repayment, a karmic repayment to our goddess, the Mother Earth, for allowing us to stay here, for creating this unbelievable classroom for all of us and sacrificing herself because she is keeping her vibrations very low. And, you know, Sunbeam is there to allow us to give a token repayment. Now, how is that done? It's not just sort of a, you know, let's send a blessing to the Mother Earth, which is an amazing thing to do. However, we involve greater masters that George King has basically organized this for us before, prior to his demise. And that we have masters that invoke energy from the Holy Mountains that pass through our equipment and then go, just as a high level here, it goes into a psychic center of the earth. The energy from the mountains that is being used, it's not like we've drained the mountains completely. It's just that block of energy that should have gone out to humanity as a benefit, for example, is no longer accessible to us. And we are sacrificing that to her. And for what it's worth, we've had incredible, incredible success with Operation Sunbeam. We can get into that another time, I think, Chrissy. But that is the wonderful aspect. I can't even imagine performing Operation Sunbeam in the way that it's being performed without the contribution of the energy from Operation Starlight Mountains.
Yes, thank you for going through that, Gino. That's very, very helpful indeed. So, Gino, we just have a few minutes left in the show. I think I might just talk a little bit about my experience on Mount Telak, just because they're going there soon. They have a pilgrimage there. It was actually September the 11th, 2001, when Gary and I made the pilgrimage. But when we made the pilgrimage, we didn't know. And of course, everybody in America remembers, or who's old enough, remembers that fateful day when the planes crashed into three towers and thousands of people were killed. Well, we happened to be on Mount Telak at the time, praying for world peace. And we're at the charge, near the charge spot doing the 12 blessings. And suddenly the sky went black and there was lightning and thunder on the top of a mountain, came out of the blue, which is very dangerous. So we started to run, sort of almost run down the mountain. But we felt inspired to keep stopping, even though it was pouring with rain, and doing the 12 blessings on the way down. And we knew something was going on in the world. We didn't know what. And when we got to the bottom, back to our bed and breakfast, we saw all these flags at half mast. And we later found out that it was 9/11. It was a fateful day. And we often wonder, there was some kind of devic reaction to this horrendous energy that we felt on this mountain. And it was very, very interesting indeed. But amazing things do happen on these holy mountains. I just wanted to say that.
Absolutely. So many times we've been on the tops of mountains, and you go back into the cosmic voices of the past. And as soon as the ritual starts, and the 12 blessings prayers, you know, it could be inclement weather, a little bit of a pelting rain coming, a very miserable time. But during that 12 blessings of 15, 20 minutes, it's all just seems to pause. And sometimes we've had sunlight come through.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you, as soon as we stop, Chrissy, praying, those clouds come back in and the rain just continues. And it's like, what is going on? It's just incredible, the experiences that people have had. And we can affect the weather. We can affect for the good, obviously, for a positive, in so many ways, more than we actually realize.
Yes, thank you, Gino. I think we're going to close up now. I'd like to say a few closing words. History is being made now, as we know, in the Aetherius Society. It's a very exciting time. It's a very difficult time in the world, but it's also a very exciting time when we tune into these amazing things that are happening, like Operation Starlight, and the fact that we all can be a part of this. And we're all part of this history, if you like. And in hundreds of thousands of years' time, I believe we will look back and remember this and be thrilled that we were a part of it, a positive part of it, that we heard about these things, that we participated in joining in pilgrimages and or spreading the word if we were unable to join in with them about them. It's worth all our time and effort because we have been told that Operation Starlight was the most important occult task undertaken on Earth for 100,000 years. And it didn't happen in the past. It's our modern history. We are the pioneering pilgrims of these holy mountains, if you like, these new age power centers. I'd like to just close with this reading from an extract from our master's lecture, Dr. George King, when he says, "Here is a great God-given power awaiting your use. A power which can help raise the whole level of spiritual consciousness on Earth. It is up to you to go to these mountains and radiate this wonderful power out to all, and so offer to all men a divine opportunity to help kindle a flame of peace and spiritual prosperity to illumine this dark Earth." And in the couple of minutes left, Gino, do you have any closing words?
Yes, wanted to thank you for asking me to be on the show. It's a big honor and a thrill, honestly. And the topic is very near and dear to my heart. I love Operation Starlight. I would encourage the audience to join in, especially in an official pilgrimage of the Aetherius Society. There are reasons for that. Whenever there are official pilgrimages, there is a link to the higher realms that our master has set up on our behalf to even potentize the experience even more. So if you can, definitely. And it is a safer way to go, because you're going to be climbing with experienced people, you know, so all around it's a good idea. And if you wanted to find out more about these, by all means, get in touch with with our headquarters, branches, groups around the world and show them your interest. And we'll definitely get you the right information.
Thank you so much, Gino, for being a guest on the show. And also, whenever you go to a pilgrimage, you'll feel this tremendous spirit of camaraderie wherever you go.
Absolutely.
So please join us. So thank you so much, Gino. And I will hand us back to our producer, Nikki, for the closing announcements. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Chrissy and Gino, for sharing your own personal experiences on these holy mountains and also such fascinating information about these sacred mountains of power. Thank you so much. That was excellent information. Thank you. So please do join us on September the 17th for another exciting Aetherius Radio Live show when more intriguing subjects will be discussed during this hour of truth. And as Gino mentioned, details of all pilgrimage due to be held this year and even next year, then please visit our website, aetherius.org. You can connect with your hosts, Richard, through his website, richardlawrence.co.uk, Chrissy through her website, chrissyblaze.com, and of course, Gino through the Society's website, aetherius.org. We hope you enjoyed the show and thank you so much for listening, and we look forward very much to your company next month.